Hello, everyone. Welcome back. So now we get to dig deep into SQL query.
SQL query? But I thought this was a NoSQL database.
Yeah.
You have SQL in a NoSQL database.
Yeah, the name, again, is really unfortunate because...
So it stands for structured query language, right?
Right.
So it's a way to write a query language that's structured. Select something from somewhere where some condition is true.
Yeah, the NoSQL movement has nothing... No problem with SQL language itself because it does its job well, and that's the motto of NoSQL.
So the NoSQL paradigm was more a way to provide alternatives for relational database management systems, right?
Yeah. So in that sense, we wanted to support SQL out of the box because it's something everyone is familiar with. You can get started, and there are some nice ways you can extend the JSON model to work well with query.
Excellent.
So in this session, we'll start and take first we'll start and take a look at SQL over JSON to see one how this flavor of SQL is different from the SQL that you're familiar with. We'll take a close look at how the grammar works. So things like how you do your select from where and the subtle differences that you run into when you work with this language. We'll take a look. We'll go launch into a SQL demo. And no discussion on query is complete without looking at indexing. So we'll take a look at how indexing in DocumentDB works. And on top of it, we will look at how you configure indexing policy. We'll spend some time in Visual Studio as well. So with that in, let us take a look at SQL over JSON. How does it work exactly? We looked into this a little bit briefly. So SQL is popular. It's rich, very expressive. So you can do a lot of logic. You can express things in a declarative way, which works well with document databases as well. But for SQL to work well with DocumentDB and other document databases, it's important that the SQL had to be rooted in JSON and JavaScript semantics. So things like the type system isn't going to be SQL types, but it has to work well and natively with the JavaScript type system. And there you have your numbers, you have your strings, objects, arrays, booleans, and nulls, and that's it. What we also wanted to build in is that the language had to be extensible. Part of in the spirit of being a developer-friendly database, well, you should be able to extend your query language in many ways, in whatever that makes sense. So you can just write user-defined functions in JavaScript, and JavaScript runs on your JSON documents with very little impedance mismatch. So what you can do is you can take that and add logic that isn't already there in the language.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and... What does SQL mean in a world of denormalized data? So it's not enough just to have rows and columns, but you also need to go, you have to look at the hierarchical data. You'll have to go descend into your JSON document. You need to be really flexible in terms of the data format that comes out. So how you transform your JSON arrays, that's going to be really important, and we wanted to make sure that the query language supports those features. And joins in this brave new world of denormalized data. We'll take a look at how that works, how you work with arrays, how you unwind those arrays to get joins like in relational databases. So if you look at it at the highest level, it's really simple. It's JSON in and JSON out. So you have a collection of JSON documents that go in. You apply your transformations using your select from where clauses. You build the JSON array as it comes out, and the output is a set of JSON documents. And the beauty of it is it's all backed by the DocumentDB index. So what you have is the ability to go write query against your data as it changes. And now that's powerful, and it comes... and I think, Ryan, you touched upon this, which is the fact that JSON is self-describing.
Yep.
So we don't need you to tell us your index beforehand.
Absolutely.
The index can be inferred as the document as it comes in.
We treat the JSON document as a tree, effectively.
Yeah, and that's the intuition for DocumentDB's index and query language, which is that every path in your document is essentially something we take in index.
Yeah.
And the shape of your trees is what we use to serve the query, the SQL queries from as well. And that's what we'll dig into, what that means, what the tree means, and how you control paths when we look at indexing policies next. And the query language is SQL. In SQL, you can write queries in pretty much any of the SDKs. You can also take what we have in the REST API. You can run it over the REST API. If you're working within .NET, we also have a link provider, like a lot of other data providers. So you write link, and it's natively and naturally translated to SQL. So that's convenient. It works well with a managed programming environment.
But if I'm in .NET and I can't figure out link and can't figure out where to put the where and the select and the funny lambda expressions, and because I'm an old school SQL guy, I can just write SQL queries, right?
Yeah, if you're an old school SQL guy like you or me, then we would just use the SQL string inside of the .NET API.
But if the .NET link and lambda functions and that kind of stuff feels more familiar and more more friendly to you, well then you can go ahead and build your queries in link, right?
Exactly.
Well, that's awesome.
And the same is within a JavaScript stored procedures as well, because inside of stored procedures, you can do things like create documents, read documents. You can also do queries much the same way. So before we dig deep into the syntax, it's helpful to set the context with a few examples. So what I will do is I will first show you a Visual Studio to see what it typically looks like working with DocumentDB and querying. So we talked about this briefly. So what I have here is a sample method which does querying over link. So what you can see here, and I have it highlighted in this section, is a simple old link query. And what it does is it operates against this data type that I defined in my file, which is a toy example we use in our samples. You can see it in our Azure tutorial as well. And it's Ryan's favorite data set, the families data set.
I like the families data set because everyone can kind of understand the concept of, hey, a family's got a last name, it's got some parents, the parents might not actually have the same last name, they've got children have pets. You know, it's a data set that's familiar to everybody.
Right, and it in this example, for example, you can see that a family has an array of parents inside, mm-hmm. and it also has an array of children. And if you look into child has properties of its own, and a child has one or more pets. Mm-hmm. Now you can imagine this would be a messy in a relational database setting where you'll have to set up three tables.
Yeah.
But here it's more of what you see is what you get. Mm-hmm. You're going to take what we have here, this object. Either take just the property names and serialize it to JSON, or if you want to decorate it with JSON.NET attributes or data member attributes, we'd use that and serialize it down, and the link provider knows what to do with it as well. So getting back to that example, so if we go into this sample and we look at a few examples of queries, so here you see, this is one flavor, where you have your link from select where, and you iterate over this, and what you get is an array of families back. Mm-hmm. The second example is link lambdas, which is perfectly fine as well. It's fluent, it works, so some people like this better. And you can express your expression in terms of family objects.
Cool, yeah.
And of course, with SQL queries, we introduced this a couple months back, where you can supply parameterized SQL statements. So what happens?
All right, cool.
Is so you can just supply ID as a parameter here and include it in the payload. This works really well if you have some user-facing application and you want to restrict the input that comes in.
You want to prevent horrible people from typing in stuff they shouldn't and affecting the results, potentially affecting the results of the query, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. In DocumentDB, because of its HTTP over REST and SQL is read-only, you don't have some of the worst problems of SQL injection.
So I can't drop a database
yeah.
Via a query, but I could potentially type a query that got me access to data that I shouldn't be getting.
Exactly. Okay. So, yeah, accidental exposure is something you can guard against with SQL parameterization.
Cool.
So that's an example. But to really see it in action, I'd like to show you the SQL Query Playground. So this is a tool that we built out there, more as a learning tool and something for you to get started without actually getting a subscription.
Okay. Cool. Nice.
So what you can do is you can type in, this shows you a few sample queries that, and walks you through the grammar and how what the things you can do with the DocumentDB. And we've hosted a data set that contains a bunch of information from the USDA nutrition site. On top of it, you can also access the family's data set. There are two kinds of documents stored within the same collection because DocumentDB lets you do that.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
So in here,
I can store, you know, here you've got food, I can store families, I can store something else. It doesn't really matter. It's a schema-free collection, right?
Exactly.
A bag of documents.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this query is exactly what you would expect. It looks like your plain vanilla SQL statement. You have select a bunch of properties that you want to project, ID, description, tags, and food group, and then you have a filter clause in here. So in the filter clause, it says, I want to check for this food group, and I also want to filter by this ID. And the result you get back is this, you get one JSON document back, which matches both of these constraints. And this has some information about snack bars. So that was just what the way you would write SQL statements, except for the twist that you got JSON arrays back.
Yep.
But now let's take a look at something more complicated. So in this case, we're doing a range query. And now we'll touch upon this a little bit later. Range queries need a special kind of index.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the default. The default in DocumentDB is a hash index. So what you can do is equality against any property in your document.
So but you can say where field equals value, right?
Exactly. Okay. And instead, if you wanted to do things like check if a number is within a range, then what you can do is you can specify a range index just on that path
okay.
to say, you know, the path leading up to version in my JSON documents must be indexed.
Can I set, you know, if I don't know which paths up front in my document that I want to potentially do range queries on, could I set a range index at the root and say include all properties below?
You definitely can.
Okay.
So
I can have a hash on my whole document and a range on my whole document if I wanted to, right?
Yeah, you can tweak this to suit your application, the shape of your data.
Mm-hmm.
So you can say, I want this section of my document. Like, we looked at the family's data set. So in there, you could say, everything under my children, I want to be indexed at a higher precision with range index.
Cool.
And everything else in a different way with the defaults. You could do that as well.
And we'll talk a little bit more later when we get down to like optimization and stuff about, you know, excluding certain paths. If you know you're never going to query on it and you've got this, you know, really big document, you can exclude some paths from the index. And I mean, what would the downside be of me just saying, hey, on every document, index everything at the root with a hash and a range and everything? What would the downside of that be?
Well, for the vast majority of cases, we hope you could just do that. But there are always going to be cases where you want to get the maximum possible performance.
Okay.
So,
and there's also going to be a storage overhead, right?
Right.
I mean, because if I've got a 256K JSON file and I index every property with a hash and every property with a range index, you know, now I'm not going to be storing 256K anymore. I'm going to be storing a considerable amount more, right?
Yeah, and we've put in a lot of work into the index efficiency in terms of what the storage overhead is for a typical data set. So what we've seen, especially in running thousands of customers, is we are able to serve automatic index on everything with less than 2 to 10% storage overhead. So that's really powerful. You could always have these use cases where you have a large number of numbers, and your numbers take a wide range of values, then it's possible that you have a higher index overhead. And there's always, you can, but in the spirit of being a developer-friendly database, we'll let you tweak all these settings so you only do the work that you want to do.
Okay. But for the most part, I mean, if you've, you know, we think that the general, the default behavior is going to make, you know, 80% of the case, but, you know, we give you those levers and those levers to cater for the 20% where you actually need to squeeze out the best performance, right?
Right.
Okay, cool.
So let's take a look at another more complex example. Here is an example. Now, when you're working with a document database, often what you want to do is you want the JSON to be exactly in the shape that you need. Because in this case, let's take this example where I took this out and I just did a select star. Now this is perfectly fine, but let's say I have a custom code in a .NET application that needs to deserialize this into a smaller object that I can work with. Or let's say I have different versions of apps that need the data available in different forms. What DocumentDB lets you change the shape of your JSON by using the JSON transformation operators.
Cool. So this is like kind of server-side projections, right? So I can completely change what fields come back. You know, if I've got a really large document and I'm only listing, you know, first name and surname, I don't want to bring back the rest of the document because that's wasted kind of data over the wire. I could just bring back what you were showing here of select first name, comma, surname, and I can concat them together using a UDF if I wanted to.
Yeah, okay. A real world use case is, I know you will describe this later, is how this works with Azure Search, for example.
Yeah.
Because that requires flat JSON structures. And what if your JSON is nested underneath? Now, having operators like you can see on the screen, where I'm accessing the servings, the first serving in this array description for a food item, and I'm just getting the description out. And when I run this out, I've denested my JSON, and it's just something really clean and concise at the end of the day. The same thing you
That's
can do.
That's very cool, yeah.
Yeah, and it can be extremely powerful in terms of adapting to changes, in making sure that you're able to read data in a different schema, or as your data evolves, how you can offer a common view using the query language.
Very cool.
And join, which is another cool feature that a lot of people might not be familiar with, but it's joins with a twist, which is that
joins with a twist.
Yeah, so it's an intra document join, but you can think of it much the same way. Logically, what you have is your main data set, and within the data set you have a bunch of references. So in this sample, what you can see. Let me show you the food document itself. Then we can take a look and see where the join really helps us. So this is a food item, which says, I mean, it has information about blueberries. Now, one thing what you can see, and you can think of a bunch of use cases where you might want to do this, is you have an array of arbitrary tags that are associated with it. Yep. And so you want to find any food item that has blueberries in the blueberries or is related to blueberries. And one way to do that is would be to unravel this tags array and then pretend as if, I mean, you can think of it in a relational database where you had food items and you had a tags as the join table.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would join them both and filter on a query on
the
tag.
So this is
like
unpacking an array, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But then you could just do it with the join statement. And here now you have all the food items that have blueberries in them. So this way you can project out the description and the name of food items. And lastly, user-defined functions. Now, user-defined functions are really powerful, mainly because you can have arbitrary code in them. You have all the power of JavaScript in here to use within queries. And we saw the JSON construction operators, but you can do more. You can look up against a table and perform a mapping. let's say you had a day of the week and then you wanted to find the corresponding, you wanted to display Monday to Friday using that information. That's something that you can easily do with a UDF. Here in this example, what we have is the JavaScript match. So I wanted some kind of regular expression search. So what I did is, you can't see, I cannot execute this in this window, but I wrote a JavaScript function that looked something like this. Say, take an input and a regex, and then I say input.matchofRegex. So it's a simple one-line JavaScript function that I go and register under the name match. So once I've done that and registered on the collection, which we have done as part of the demo, what you can do is you can take that and do a regular expression search on top of everything within DocumentDB.
That's pretty cool.
But the one disclaimer that I would add is always be careful when you have things like user-defined functions in the where clause.
Yeah.
Because you, at that point, if you we won't be able to use the index.
We won't be able to use the index, right? And then we're going to have to revert back to a scan to go and scan every document, feed it into the UDF, and then assess whether the condition was correct or not. There's no way we can index upfront the results of your UDF.
Yep, that's true.
So UDFs work really, really well inside the select clause because that then we're not relying on that. We're then just using the UDF to change the output of the select statement, right? But the where clause is the important one when it comes to indexing because that's the one that we're going to go scan the index for things that match those predicates, right?
Yeah.
And there's no way we can predict upfront that what the result of your UDF is going to be.
Right.
Okay. Cool. But they will work. We'll just revert to a scan.
Right.
So the performance might be a little bit slower than it would be if you were just using the index natively.
Yeah, and it's perfectly fine in the where clause as long as you have other filters.
Yeah.
Filter
down your data and then potentially have a UDF at the end that just operates on a really small set of data.
Exactly.
Or use the from clause to kind of change the scope of the of what we're looking at as well, right?
That works too.
So if you know you're querying within the parents array of your family data set, then instead of looking at the whole document, you can actually just, you can use the from clause to say, hey, from, families.parents. And now we know that we're only looking at a piece of each document. We're not looking at the whole document. Okay.
Yeah, that's a good feature. We didn't look at a sample of that, but it's all available in our tutorial.
Okay.
And you can also try this in the playground and try looking at subsections of the document by nesting in the from clause.
And there's a really good document on our documentation page. So if you go to azure.com, go to documentation, go to DocumentDB, and have a look, there's a really, really good article. I'll paste the link to the article in the chat window that walks you through our query document in a lot more detail than we can do online here. Cool.
All right. So let's take, now that we've had a walkthrough, I do want to mention a few subtle points, especially where DocumentDB SQL differs from the ANSI SQL that you're most likely familiar with. Mm-hmm. The first interesting aspect of it is now we are doing SQL over REST. So you have all the goodness of HTTP REST and SQL running inside. So you have some fun things like you don't even need a from clause. So, we wanted to make sure that it was a familiar programming environment. So you can either use a root keyword or can use any valid string. But you can also do queries without a from keyword in case you want a literal. So in case you want to do select one query, that's perfectly fine as well. One of the realities of working with schemaless data is that everything has to be fully qualified. So if you are doing something, you're accessing a property called ID, you will have to call it f.id. So you cannot call it an unqualified ID because it's hard for us to bind it without knowing the schema beforehand.
Yep. Whereas in normal ANSI SQL, we know the schema up front, so we can go bind it.
Yep.
I mean, you don't have to fully qualify everything. Here, you could be, every document could be different. So you should go and qualify every field. Okay.
And we already touched upon the stuff with descending into subsections of your document. So effectively, this would be query only my reference data within SQL. So like families.children, you can descend in your from clause and query. The where statement is again, familiar to most of you. You have a combination of arithmetic expressions, you have logical expressions, you can do bitwise operations. All of that is supported within the where clause. There are some interesting nuances in here around how you treat missing properties. Because unlike in SQL, when you project on something, it might be present in all of the documents. The property, for example, if you're filtering on last name, it might be called surname in some documents. So it might be completely absent. It could be present in some and absent in others.
Yep.
So what we try to handle these cases is to bring a true JavaScript flavor. So in that sense, if you worked with JavaScript and this would be very familiar to you, these missing members evaluate to undefined. And the same thing when you have mismatch types, when you're trying to perform operations that are not supported on a particular type. Because again, you also have the issue of dealing with a property that could be a string in some documents, it could be an array in other documents. So the behavior of undefined lets you handle these fluently and easily within code. Now, one of the things that you have to watch out and might trip you up is because it's designed to be a scalable multi-tenant system. We have limits in terms of various features of queries. So how many ands you can put in a query, how many ors you can put in a query, how many UDFs are referenced. So what you can do in most of these cases, we have set these as best practices. So having a query that follows these conditions is likely to scale well, is likely to run in a few milliseconds. So in that sense, there are good limits to follow. But you can always reach us at Azure support in case you have a use case where you need to increase these limits, and we'll do our best to accommodate.
Cool.
I've heard from a lot of customers that the features in this slide are worth talking about because they can really help with productivity. One is this excellent value keyword. Now, I can show you value real quick as part of the query playground because that'll help understand the where and how you would use it. So let's take your simple hello world query. So I have select hello world. Now, when I run this, you see that we always wrap the query with some property when you don't alias it. So if you did something like hello world as message, then we would use a message to alias your response as a valid JSON object. But then when you don't, we just give you a $1. Now, what you can do is you can also bring back just the JSON fragment. So in this case, I just want the string literal hello world, and you can do that with value. This feature is especially powerful when you want to do things like bring back a SQL query response and use it with link, because when you get the JSON back, it is exactly what your object is.
Yeah.
So when you're working with SQL, think of the value keyword, it'll likely come in handy. And one of the new additions that we have recently made in the query language is the ability to have built-in functions. So a lot of the cases we looked at JavaScript's match, but then what we want to do is bring all these functions natively within the language so you don't have to write code. So you can also use built-in functions. Take a look at the reference. We will send you links as part of along with this talk as well as to how built-in functions work.
Cool.
We talked about UDFs. We talked about join SQL parameterization. There are also a few more operators that we have newly introduced, like the ternary operator as well as the coalesce operators. So again, these are really handy because you can build expressive logics, logic that you can write, especially in SQL, where you would use a case when end kind of statement. You could take this logic as well and write using the ternary operator. Now, the indexing and query section we'll cover in more detail as part of the optimization module that we'll be covering in a bit. But we touched upon a few of these topics. The indexing policy is extremely flexible in terms of the things that you can do with it. So you can do things like you can control if your index is going to be automatic or manual. You can think of this being as really helpful when you have things like you have certain documents which is just for reference, and you don't want to index it. You'll never query on it. You can just choose to not index those documents. You can choose between consistent indexing and lazy indexing, and that can be really powerful as well, because you can control the consistency level of queries as they pertain to data access. So you can say, I want my reads to be strongly consistent, but my queries could be eventually consistent, because what's more important to me is for the data to be written really quickly. So lazy indexing helps with that as well. And indexing policy fills in the gap between, to say, I have some properties within the document. I have other properties that I won't ever use for querying. So you can manage the indexing policy using our SDK. I won't go through all the examples in this slide, but the index path shorthand is fairly easy to understand. So what this roughly translates to, again, is the path within the JSON document represented as a tree. So what you can think of is a property, any property that you have with the name prop would be under the path prop followed by a wildcard character. So the value is where it is. So if you had an index path for a prop and a question mark, you will be able to serve queries like a select star from collection where c.prop is value. So if you had a hash index, you could do the first. If you had a range index on that path, you could do the second query below, which is greater than 5. The same thing applies with recursion. So you can say, from the root of the document, which is everything, I want some behavior and override it based on the recursion and nesting level within it. So that's the summary of the things we looked at. As part of this module, in conclusion, we looked at SQL over JSON, how SQL query language would work over JSON documents, how the grammar works, and how it's different from your relational database. We looked at the query playground, and we touched upon we played around with a few sample queries, and we took a brief look at indexing policy. And that wraps it up.
Cool. So that wraps up querying. Great. Thank you very much. We're going to take another 10-minute break. So go get something to drink, get some food, go run around the block, get some fresh air, whatever you want to do. We'll see you in 10 minutes.